88.3 Southern FM.
So let's head off then into our Earth, Planet Earth series.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Welcome to episode 16 of our Planet Earth series. Now, these programs are a mix of factual reports, poetry, a bit of fanciful music, and tonight we even have an interview. Now, Dr. Amy Parker is the Satellite Operations and Data Manager at Kensington in Western Australia for SIRO. And she's joining us now on the telephone line all the way from Western Australia. Good evening, Amy.
Hi, great to be with you.
Well, 2 weeks ago, we had a feature about NovaSAR, and we decided we need to know more about it. So could you please tell us, Amy, what NovaSAR is?
Absolutely. So we, as a country in Australia, we use a lot of Earth observation data, so a lot of imagery from satellites, and that tells us all sorts of things. It tells us about weather, our agriculture. We can look at mapping minerals. We can do all sorts of things with this data, but we've never really operated one of those satellites ourselves. And NovaSAR is kind of our first taste at doing that. So we have a 10% capacity share of this satellite. So we 10% of the time we can tell it where and when we want it to collect imagery. And it uses a type of technology called synthetic aperture radar, or SAR. And that's quite different to most of the Earth observation satellites that we traditionally use, because instead of relying on the sun to illuminate the Earth, it actually uses an active microwave signal. And that means that it can collect images at night and through cloud cover as well. So it's a really powerful form of Earth observation data, and the first time that we are actually operating one of these satellites ourselves.
Synthetic implies that it's sort of a made-up sort of picture.
The synthetic refers to the aperture of the radar. So rather than having kind of a really long physical kind of aperture, the satellite is moving as it's taking those images, and so it's formulating this synthetic aperture. So that's what that's referring to.
Okay. Now, what's the advantage of synthetic aperture over visible cameras?
So really, it provides a different type of information. So one of the advantages is that it's, rather than being sort of sensitive to chemical composition or colour, it's sensitive to structure. So it's that radar signal reflects off the structure of things on the ground. So it can be useful for telling us about things like biomass and the differences between parts of the vegetation canopy. So it's providing a different set of observations. But really, it comes into its own when you try and use it in cloudy regions, so up in the northern part of Australia, or you know, down in Tasmania, in the southern parts where it can be pretty cloudy some of the time. It allows you to make measurements irrespective of the weather conditions, and as I said as well, also at night time.
Now, this satellite called NovaSAR 1 was built in the United Kingdom. So what share of this does SIRO have?
Yes, it's quite an interesting concept, because rather than just having, you know, a single operator, what they've actually done is had this satellite that was part-funded by the UK government and built by a company called Surrey Satellite Technology Limited. And then there were a set of mission partners, and each of those bought a capacity share. So it kind of allows countries that don't have that heritage in satellite operations to begin to develop that capability, which is exactly what we've done. So we have a 10% share, so it's a pretty modest share of the satellite's capability. But the idea is that it's really a pathfinder then for us being able to operate our own satellites in the future.
So it's a bit like if you can't afford your own holiday home, you buy a share on one.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Okay, and what's your role in the project?
So I've been involved with a couple of other colleagues in establishing the ground segment for the satellite. So how do we actually get that data from the satellite to Earth? And how do we then process it and distribute it to users? And what we're also doing is opening up access to that data to everyone, free and open access. And we want people to submit science proposals. So if you're a researcher who's interested in using this type of data for your purposes, you can submit a science proposal. And then we have a committee that will review those and allocate time on the satellite. So I've been involved in establishing all of those kind of operational activities, and then actually trying to do some science with the data that we're getting down. So we've been able to look at things like bushfire that occurred on Fraser Island in December of last year, I think it was, and just really start to be able to probe some of this data and see what it can tell us about our living environment.
And what are some of the other applications that NovaSAR data can be put to?
So one of the things that we're really interested as I mentioned before, is this vegetation structure question. And the reason it's so interesting for us is that NovaSAR operates at a different wavelength compared to the other synthetic aperture radar satellites. So it's the only one up there that's operating at what we call S-band. And this is kind of like having almost a different, say, filter on a camera. It sees the world slightly differently. And we want to see what advantages does that give us when we're looking at things like forest canopy cover.
And which division of CSIRO is managing NovaSAR?
So it's forward under what used to be called the Astronomy and Space Science Division and is now called Space and Astronomy. So it's the same group that also manage all of Australia's radio telescope infrastructure as well. So we're sort of building on our capability and history of running these national facilities for research.
And is there a ground station in Australia that's receiving the data directly from the satellite, or do we have to get it from overseas?
That's exactly it. That's one of the key things that we've been really interested in, is setting up an Australian ground station. And so we're in a partnership with a ground station in Alice Springs that's operated by a group called the Centre for Appropriate Technology. And we are in the process of onboarding with them so that we can have our data directly downlinked to Australia. And that should mean that we're able to access it in closer to near real time. So how quick we'll be interested to, you know, to tell how quickly we can get the data after it's captured, process it, and then use it to tell us about, for example, bushfires or other time-sensitive applications.
Yeah, that's been an issue with some of the other satellites, isn't it, that it takes time to get the data from overseas to here because it has to be processed overseas and, they're not always in a rush to give it to us.
Yeah, and I mean, you are limited by how often the satellite visits the location of the fire. So NovaSAR has approximately a 16-day revisit period. So we're not anticipating that it would be the go-to satellite for every bushfire. But there will be instances where it's providing a really useful source of information or filling a gap when other satellites aren't necessarily overhead. So accessing that data much more quickly will be extremely useful for us.
Why was Alice Springs chosen?
Alice Springs was chosen in part because it's actually very well situated in the middle of the country, almost. So it gives really good coverage. I think it covers just about everywhere, other than perhaps the very western coast of Western Australia. But it provides a really good coverage of the country so that we can downlink the data from, you know, if the satellite's over the east coast or the west coast, we can still downlink.
And is the station near the Landsat receiving station, which is just south of Alice Springs, and I've been to a couple of times?
I think it might be quite nearby, actually. I haven't actually made it out there yet, but we're hoping that we'll be able to sort of run some training courses and work with CFAT to do some stuff with the data as well as just downlink it there as well.
A bit difficult to get there at the moment with the COVID restrictions.
We can dream.
Yes. Now, if any of our listeners think they can use NovaSAR to advance their research, how can they access the data already collected or ask for additional images to be made?
So we have, I think, about 1,500 images that have already been collected, and all of those are available to download now on a data hub. And we also have a link to the proposal system that you can use to apply for time. And we'll be accepting proposals up until, I think it's the 8th or 9th of September, and then we will close the proposals, assess the ones that we've received, and then reopen that system again. And all of that information is available on our website, and that is research.ciro.au/CCEO, and that's the CSIRO Centre for Earth Observation. And you'll find all of the information about NovaSAR, about how you can use the data, and a bit more about how it was built and when it was launched. It's all contained on that website.
And what do you expect the lifetime of NovaSAR 1 to be?
I think it's anticipated to be 7 years. And, you know, sometimes satellites far outlive their expected lifespan. So fingers crossed we'll get more than 7 years out of it. But it was a seven-year planned lifespan.
What sort of altitude is it flying at?
It's about 530 or 580 kilometres, I think. So it's in a low Earth orbit.
Okay, so at that altitude, it should take several years before its orbit decays due to atmospheric drag.
Yeah, and it's, you know, every now and again we go through a period where the mission operator will say, you know, you can't task images this day because they'll be doing an orbital firing to sort of maintain its orbit or to do a collision avoidance. So that does happen very, very occasionally.
Is there any prospect of a second satellite like a NovaSAR 2?
Good question. We'd love there to be. you know, there are a number of sort of studies underway at the moment, investigating what types of satellites would be sort of most valuable for Australian conditions and what are the gaps in satellites that are already up there. You know, what do we want to be able to sense that we can't already? So whether that's a radar satellite or a different type of satellite, it'll be interesting to see, I think, over the next 5 to 10 years where that takes us. But there are definitely really large-scale synthetic aperture radar missions that are going to be launched by the European Space Agency and by NASA. So we're really keen to develop more capability to use this type of data in Australia. Kind of surprisingly, it's not been that well used previously. And so developing that expertise and getting some awareness around this type of data is really important, I think, in order to be ready for those new missions.
Now, I note your title, your job title, is Satellite Operations and Data Manager. What does a Satellite and Operations Data Manager do?
Lots of contracting and procurement. But that's obviously been in establishing the ground station, you know, and the ground system setup. So a lot of it is around obviously doing the day-to-day tasking of the satellite and sort of the forward mission planning, deciding which imagery we need in order to meet our science objectives. But my background is as a sort of a postdoctoral researcher, as an academic, so I'm also interested in the application of the data. So a lot of what I do is around you know, being involved in science projects that actually use this type of imagery in research as well. So goes a little beyond, I think, the operations side of things, but that's definitely a you know, significant part of it.
So you've partly answered my next question. That was, how did you get into this work?
I actually did a geophysics undergraduate degree and a PhD in volcanology, but always with the use of Earth observation satellite imagery, and that's really how I got started. And then I went from that kind of downstream application of the data to the upstream, which is, you know, the operations of the satellite and how that data is distributed to users. How do we collect the right data and how do we get it to users and how can they then use it to do So it's really kind of spanning that whole spectrum from the collection of the data to, you know, publishing science papers at the end of it. But that's a rough outline of how I got there. But it's a fantastic role to be in and a very exciting time for space in Australia.
Certainly is. And speaking of space in Australia, CSIRO's developing another satellite called CSIRO-SAT. Do you have any role in that?
I used to be a little bit involved in CSIRO-SAT. It's actually my colleague, Laura Brindle, who is the other kind of satellite operations and data manager, who's been involved in that CubeSat development. But again, it's really a great project to have even been on the edge of. So this is a shortwave infrared imager, so it's a different type of sensor that's on board that satellite. And I think they're interested in, particularly in looking at sort of cloud formation studies, but then there are a whole host of other applications for that data. So again, things like bushfires and also land cover classification, so looking at different vegetation types and land use types. And one of the interesting things about that satellite is that they're trying to integrate onboard processing of the data. So that means that they will be doing a level of processing of the data actually on board the CubeSat before it reaches the Earth. And we're seeing more and more movement in that direction. So it's an interesting field, and I'm really glad that they've managed to integrate that into the CubeSat they're developing.
I know you're not involved in directly in it, but do you have any idea when it will be launched?
I think it might be in the last quarter of this year or next year. I'm not entirely sure. Again, the Centre for Earth Observation website has a little bit of information about that. So any listeners that are interested in the CubeSat, that would also be the place to go and find out a bit more.
Well, thank you for joining us here on The Space Show, Amy. I've been speaking with Amy Parker, the Satellite and Operations and Data Manager, based in Kensington, Western Australia. By the way, where is Kensington?
It's Perth.
It's in Perth, okay. Well, I'm geographically ignorant when it comes to Western Australia. Sorry about that. Okay. Well, anyway, Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to speak to you.
Yes, good.
This is Planet Earth. You're looking at Planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is Planet Earth.
Planet Earth. And more about NovaSAR now. As Amy said, the ground communications for the Australian share of NovaSAR will be managed by the Aboriginal-owned and operated ground station provider. It's based in Alice Springs, and it's the Centre for Appropriate Technology, and it was established in 1980. Its aim is to research, design, develop and teach appropriate technologies and deliver technical training to Indigenous people living in remote communities. CFAT Satellite Enterprises manages a 38-hectare site on which it hosts satellite ground stations. It partners with service providers to ensure Indigenous Australians are active participants in the space economy and realise the benefits of space-enabled services. Here we have the Chief Executive Officer of CFAT Satellite Enterprises explaining.
CFAT's goals as an organisation, for us, we've always focused on delivering infrastructure and technology solutions, mostly to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. IBA have been instrumental in coming forward and talking to us about the opportunities they could help support us in this project. They were able to provide $6 million to be able to build the two satellite dishes on our site. Aboriginal people have been dealing with technologies for thousands of years. These newer technologies that we're linking into shows that we're bridging that gap and that Aboriginal people have always been in a science and technology space. It's been crucial to their survival. And I think that's why it's easy for Aboriginal people to adapt to newer technologies that are coming out today. This is the first development of its kind on Aboriginal-owned land in Australia. IBA funded the project and global communications company Viasat partnered with the Centre for Appropriate Technology to launch a real-time Earth facility here on our site in Alice Springs. This new technology means that we've got virtually instant access to data technologies that's currently not available. We can develop programs that can help and assist land management and ranger programs, carbon farming, monitoring of fires and all sorts of things. So it's pretty significant and very important. The new infrastructure will transform the Earth observation industry in Australia by assisting to bring the potential for Earth observation imagery down from hours or days to just minutes. If you think of the breadth right across Australia, whether it's our land or our seas, to be able to provide that access to that information and data from Alice Springs is a feather in our cap, and I think Central Australia and Alice Springs should be really proud of this sort of development.
Now, Novusar 1 was launched by India. And this feature from ISRO further describes Novusar 1.
In the current PSLV C-42 mission, in its core alone configuration, the vehicle is scheduled to launch two international customer satellites, S-14 and Novusar from United Kingdom. In this configuration, the rocket is without six solid strap-on motors. This version was first flown in April 2007 and is the lightest version of the PSLV. Antrix Corporation Limited, the commercial arm of the Indian Space Research Organization, has been contracted by Surrey Satellite Technology Limited, SSTL of UK, for launching their two satellites, namely S-14 and Novusar. Designed and built by SSTL, S-14 is a high-resolution optical Earth observation satellite with a mass of 444 kilograms. It will be used for surveying resources, environment monitoring, urban management, and for the disaster monitoring. Novusar is a S-band synthetic aperture radar, SAR small satellite. This 445 kilogram spacecraft, in addition to S-band SAR payload, also carries an automatic identification receiver. Major application areas of Novusar include forest mapping, land use and ice cover monitoring, flood and disaster monitoring, ship detection and maritime monitoring. Both these satellites are planned to be launched by PSLV C-42 into a 583-kilometer sun-synchronous orbit. PSLV C-42 is all set to soar into space from Satish Dhawan Space Center at Sriharikota to complete yet another important commercial mission.
And as Dr. Amy Parker of SARO told us, that satellite has successfully been launched and we already have many, many images available from it. More about planet Earth coming up.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.
And this is the Space Show. Now, we haven't ever in 30 years, as far as I can remember, had the Grateful Dead on. Well, we're going to play a song called Throwing Stones. Now, this song takes the perspective of seeing planet Earth and humanity from space. But then we look closer and see the human conflict. People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Alternatively, those who are without sin should throw the first stones to kill someone. In other words, first look at yourself before criticizing the way others treat the world. Now, since this song was first released in 1982, the lyrics have evolved, and this is the 2015 remaster.
Sky brushing some cloud and sea, call it home for you and me. A peaceful place, a sort of looks from space. A closer look reveals the human race. Full of hope, full of grace is the human face. But afraid, we may lay our home to waste. There's a fear down here we can't forget. Hasn't got a name just yet. Always awake, always around. Singing ashes, ashes all fall down.
Ashes, ashes all fall down.
Now watch as the ball revolves and the nighttime falls. And again the hunt begins. And again the blood wind calls. Sidewalks and it rolls the streets, staking turf, dividing up meat. Nightmare, spook, peace and heat. It's you and me, you and me. Hey, flash blade in ghetto night. Cat alley, rope and bones. Need that cash to feed that Jones. And the politicians throwing stones. Singing ashes, ashes all fall down.
Ashes, ashes all fall down.
Call my sergeant, pinstripe bosses, roll the dice. Any way they fall, guess who gets to pay the price? Money green, the proletarian gray. Selling guns. Shake their bones and the politicians throwing stones, singing ashes, ashes all fall down.
Ashes, ashes all fall down.
Flesh is ink. There, history's dead.
this place an empty store for that shining ball of blue we can call our home. So the kids, they dance, they shake their bones, and the politicians throwing stones, singing ashes, ashes, all fall down. Ashes, ashes, all fall down. Comes north, in a whole world full of petty wars, singing I got mine and you got yours. In the current fashion, step the pace, lose your step, fall out of grace. In the radical, he rants and rage, singing someone got to turn the page. Ashes all fall down. Picture a bright blue ball just spinning, spinning free. It's dizzy possibilities. Ashes, ashes all fall down.
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 The Grateful Dead's Throwing Stones.